Finally, a psychotherapist that focuses on helping people strive for self-awareness and thrive for self-satisfaction with their place in the world. It's a show for real people with real lives, with all the drama, trauma, and chaos that life can throw at you. Here she is, Dr. Bev.
There are many ways in which children can be traumatized in childhood. These include being sexually, emotionally, or physically abused, being neglected, and or growing up in situations of domestic or community violence, or being exposed to other adverse childhood experiences. Dr. Bev ran across someone who is interested in the trauma of childhood, and I want you to meet her. Sava, thank you so much for being on Emotions Are Us. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. And thank you for inviting me to be here.
Oh, you're so welcome. When I saw your book and I began reading a couple of pages of it, and it's on Amazon, by the way. And so I start reading it and I thought, this is a daily guide for people who have been traumatized and how they could do it. I said, you know what? I have to have this woman on the show. She has a story to tell and one that would be helpful to our audience. Tell me the name of your book, Sava.
The book is called Journey to the Heart, a 365-day guide to thriving after trauma. I believe that's the book that you found. And actually, since then, I've come out with another one. But that was the book that we are talking about today.
Yes. And tell me, what made you write this book that is so powerful and so compelling? What made you write this?
Well, thank you for that. And the name of the book, I think, sums it up in terms of what my personal healing journey was all about. And having been raised as a child in a very abusive home and recognizing along the journey over 20 years, it took me to kind of heal my body, mind, spirit after really struggling in my young adult and early adult years, because that's really where the issues start to show themselves. That I really was, as I understood the impact of the trauma on all the parts of who I am as a human, it was so hard to find the things that were going to help me to really put all the pieces together. Like, I recognized at a certain point in my journey that I had been as a survivor for a long time, but I was really starting to want to just move on with my life in a way, like, how do I live wholeheartedly and intentionally and, you know, in connection with God? You know, what's that day-to-day practice look like? And I really struggled with finding that resource. So I'm like okay, I'm going to create one. and that's where I started putting kind of like the little bit of the truths that I knew every day I had to focus on, because I, at some point we have to choose. And that's the beauty of being humans. We actually can choose our thoughts and our beliefs. And as I was really focusing on now, you know, who I am today and what's the world that I'm creating for myself and my family for the future, I had to every single day choose my intention or a prayer or in my meditation, what was I going to be focused on for that day? And so that's how I wrote the book. As we talked about a little bit earlier, is that every day you have a little nugget of truth. And again, I put that in kind of, those are my truth or just inspirations or empowerment statements that perhaps could give you some insight or the reader as how they can shift from the negative thinking, feeling perhaps about the past, to start focusing more on all the things that we can do to move forward.
I would imagine that the trauma you suffered as a child would have been great because it led you, it empowered you to write and to help others. You mentioned that you were traumatized and that you lived in a house of violence. How early do you recall, and are there any examples or experiences that you'd like to share?
Sure. basically, I was born to a very young mother. My mom was 19 when she gave birth to me. And as a single mom, I believe that she was groomed, meaning that my stepfather, who married her and came into our lives when I was 2 years old, he ended up sexually abusing me for my whole childhood until I pretty much got out of that house as a young teenager, where I moved into the city to move in with my grandmother that was closer to the junior college I was attending at the time. And he also was, you know, violent towards my mom. He also physically and emotionally abused me. And so basically how I've summed it up is that I never went to bed feeling safe in my house. And or I avoided being at my house at all costs, which led me to kind of I overperformed as a way of covering up my shame and my secret, because he came into our lives so young. I was so young, and the abuse started so young that it wasn't until I was, I think, like 6 or 8 that I realized that what my stepfather was doing to me at night wasn't a normal or healthy father-daughter relationship. And it was very, very confusing, because he also was at times the more loving parent, which makes it even more confusing for a child that's desperate for love and connection, because my mom, being, you know, a trauma survivor herself, was pretty shut down as a human being in those early years. And so what I realized as a 6 or 8 year old that you know, I can't tell anybody now what had happened to me, because it's been happening for so long. So then it became my shame, my secret. I felt responsible for what was happening at home. And so I played Little Miss Perfect. I was a very good student. I was a very good athlete. And so I ended up playing all the sports that I could, because I did whatever I could to avoid being in my house. So I would go from school to this practice, to that practice, and just really wore myself out by the time I knew I could go home, because my mom would be there. So it was exhausting, but I kind of compartmentalized it, disconnected from it, disassociated in a way. It wasn't that I never forgot. I mean, I always remembered and knew what had happened to me, but it was kind of this world that was kind of here just to the one side of me that I didn't really want to talk about or get into much. But it was the stress of that. And that's the biggest thing I also teach my clients today, and the people that, you know, come and read my blog. I help them understand the long-term impact of trauma, that in one way we are brilliant in how we survive, but it also can be very, very toxic. So,
yeah, I would imagine that because of the shame you felt, how you would disassociate, you would step back from that. And again, the human spirit is something, how it survives and the way that it survives through those experiences. As you said, the abuse continued until, you know, you were about to go to junior college, and the sexual abuse, the emotional abuse, it is one that makes us act out, you know, act out our lives rather than living our lives. As you said, you compartmentalized, mm-hmm. You just kind of put things in a box. And I would imagine that during those moments when he was being this pedophile, this narcissist with a child, that you were there physically, but you weren't there mentally and emotionally.
Exactly. No, I mean, I can tell you that I have memories, you know, leaving my body, and that to a little person was scary, but I left my body at times and it kind of was floating up in the ceiling. And it wasn't until I started my healing journey as an adult that I started reading books about that can happen when the pain, or I think it's more even just the emotional pain, more than physical pain, but that also can happen to someone during a car accident. They will just leave their body. Our psyche just protects, you know, our core, and by, you know, leaving the scene, so to speak. But I'd never dared to tell anybody that when I was younger. And it was not until, like I said, felt so relieved when I started reading books. No, I'm not crazy. I'm not losing my mind. This is actually a coping mechanism that our body has developed probably for as long as we've been on this planet.
And it continues, your body and your mind continues to give you that breath where you can divide, you can compartmentalize what's going on from your life at school, your life in sports. And what makes that trauma even bigger is the shame of it, the secret. Because when you go to school, as you said, you were Little Miss Perfect. And so everyone thought you were, you know, probably had this easy life, you know, you were a quiet student, you did your work, you did sports, you know, no one knew, did they? Teachers, administrators, people that you were around, your coaches, they didn't know.
No, I mean, I think the people kind of on the that in those roles that you just mentioned, I don't think they knew. But I do have to say that I believe that, I mean, his behavior around other people definitely demonstrated that he was, you know, inappropriate, overstepped people's boundaries, that he could show violence. But I think during those times, it was like, you know, you keep things to yourself. You don't mess in other people's personal business. So I do feel like there were some adult close to us in the family that probably knew, but to the extent of it, I don't think anybody knew. And again, I think, you know, what I know about domestic violence, it's also, you know, my mom felt pretty powerless and scared. And I know I did not speak up because I was also, I feared for all of our safety if I would disclose or tell somebody. And then on top of it, you know, is that as a child, I didn't even know what words to use. I mean, how do you tell somebody that your stepfather is touching your private parts? And that kind of started me on this journey that I've been working as a child sexual abuse prevention educator now for almost 15 years. And that was really my mission. After about 10 years into my healing, I realized if there had been adults around me that had been aware and educated, that had understood, because like I said, I do believe there were some signs, but the adults around us did not know, or it wasn't the norm then. And it's still a little taboo to empower both adults and children with the language of boundaries, of age appropriately educating our children with the names of the body parts, and that no is a no. And, you know, no matter who the person is, if they're hurting you or making you uncomfortable in any way, you can tell, and there will be some help for you. So.
And I hear that, and I know that in schools, you know, they teach that in health education, but then I put myself in, you know, the shoes of these children. And what do you say in a classroom of your peers when this is being taught, you know, your body parts and that you can tell and we can help you? What child is going to raise their hand and go, oh, this is happening to me at night when I go home?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, that's where it kind of has to be modeled and enforced that we know these kids may not disclose in that moment. But the truth is, I also think in a lot of classrooms, there are kids that are demonstrating behavior, because I believe, you know, when we struggle as humans, it shows up in our behavior, right? We explode because we can't keep our pain inside anymore, or kids are trying to communicate and they just don't know how to, nor do they know who the safe person is. So it is important to give kids the language, but my perspective and where I still teach today is that it is ultimately the adult's job to pay attention and to be aware of the grooming behavior and the boundary violations of the adults around all children. Ultimately, it's adults' job to keep kids safe. We can empower kids, but we are the ones that can force policy, who can monitor and train staff and volunteers. And even as empowered parents, I mean, I have three kids. I have often been labeled the crazy mom, but it's just that, well, I know as a result of it, I have educated other adults and other parents along the way. Could I have guaranteed 100% safety for my kids all the time? No, but I know it's impacted my kids in a way that they have become very aware adults. And I've actually intervened on behalf of some of their friends as a result of it. So it needs to be an ongoing conversation. And I'm like a broken record, if you can't tell already.
Well, I want that record to keep on playing, because, you know, you said something real important. You are an empowered parent. You are one of those parents who are willing to step in there and do something, say something when you see the signs of children being abused or that there's domestic violence in the home. I'm sure when you were growing up, you thought to yourself, okay, can't anyone see this? And like your family members, you mentioned, can't anyone see what's going on, what this guy is like? As a child, why won't somebody help me?
Yes.
And one of the big things is
that. Okay, I was just going to say, I mean, and that's the greatest psychological damage to children, is that if, you know, and I know that now, and, you know, reading about the ACE study that you mentioned earlier, it's like the ACE score, is that when children grow up in families and communities, in churches and schools, where, you know, things are happening to them. And the thing is, things happen to everybody. But when we can't talk to someone about it, when we can't ask for help and sort out that this wasn't your fault, and yes, the person that you loved and adored and trusted was the person hurting you, but it still wasn't your fault. And so talking about it helps us to heal and restore faster. But when we're not believed, and like you said, I do have flashback moments when I'm standing in my, you know, in my family's house, and I'm looking around, I'm like, I can't believe, you know, no adult is going to speak up and say something here. This does not look okay to me, even as a child. But, you know, after a while, you just kind of shut it off and you stop paying attention as a child, right? And then, unfortunately, you perhaps maybe even end up in situations like that as a young adult.
Okay, we're gonna hold it right there and come back to, will you help me?
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming, from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Know that there are over 42 million survivors of sexual abuse in America? Somewhere between 2 and 3 and 90% of sexual abuse victims never tell. 293,000 children and youth are estimated to be at risk for exploitation. 90% are abused by someone they know, love, and trust. 20% of child sexual abuse victims under the age of 8 most never tell. Some have don't even recall. They blocked the abuse. Sava, welcome back to Emotions Are Us. Thank you for being here with me today and sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
This is so important that you are speaking out and sharing your story. And the book that you wrote is a very powerful one of recovery, 365 days. Tell me, what do you mentioned as a mother, you know, that you are, you're called the crazy mom. I like that. Being the crazy mom is a good thing because the crazy mom will step up in a grocery store, in a school, in anywhere that she sees a child that she suspects of being abused or boundaries being crossed. You're the mom that's going to speak up.
Yes, yes, I am. Well, thank you so much for saying that. And I say crazy, but you know what, when I see that in other parents, because I know there are both moms and dads out there that will do that, my heart goes out to them. But at the same time, I now call them the courageous parents, because it takes a lot of courage to step into a scene that maybe nobody else really wants to acknowledge. But it's the minute we acknowledge the truth of what's happening that it and kind of enlightens everybody that's involved or plays a part in it. So yes, you know, I've often felt that, oh, that sinking feeling in my stomach, here it is again, I'm going to have to do it, because once you see, I can't pretend that I don't. And then I intervene and I do it with a lot of love and compassion. I'm loving but firm, that I ask questions, and while I bring some hard facts to the table, I also bring resources and help and information that I know abuse is multi-generational, and that people, hurt others. So often it is what's happening is that there's a breakdown somewhere. This person didn't get their needs met or doesn't feel supported or is feeling alone and overwhelmed. And from that perspective is where abuse happens. It's like we've lost control. We've lost the hope, so to speak. And unfortunately, then it gets taken out on those that are closest to us. So, yeah, I hear you. But you're right. And it has, like I shared earlier, I've modeled for my children how to live that way, in a way that we don't always just go along with what other people say. You question and ask why does this, you know, are we being asked to follow the rule? And I told my kids, and some parents maybe thought that I was teaching them to be disrespectful, but I'm like, no, it's that, you know, anybody that's here to help you and it doesn't feel good, that's not help. That's if you feel disrespected or uncomfortable around someone, you always have my permission to ask why or tell the person no. And I'm always going to believe my child first before I believe the adult, because I want my child to know I will always find the truth. We will always figure out what happened and the truth of it. But I want them to know that they are my most top priority. I will never believe an outside other adult before I believe what they're telling me.
Mm-hmm. And that is something that it gives me hope for the hopeless, is that there are parents that are courageous. I like that. I was known as the great crazy parent for my son, and I gave him permission to tell people, you know, especially his peers, well, now, you know, my mother's crazy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She's real crazy. Okay. No, I have to be in on curfew. My mother's crazy. And so that would be his defense sometimes, you know, when, you know, other kids would be doing things that they weren't supposed to do. He would stay out of
yes,
it because
I hear you.
He same, knew same how here. I would feel about it. And the way he would get out of it is, now, you know, my mother's crazy. Okay. Mm-hmm. And this story I tell often of being in a grocery store years ago. And I saw the child was riding in the grocery cart. So it was a small child, you know, to be riding in the grocery cart. And we're going down the aisle, and I saw this mother. She had two other children with her and the one in the cart. And the one in the cart reached over and pulled something off the shelf. She smacked that kid so hard that it just slid its little body to the side of the cart. And it enraged me. It enraged me so much. And in that moment, I looked around and other people just continued down the aisle as if they didn't see this happening. I couldn't do that. Sava, I could not do that. Mm-hmm. I had to stop. I knew that this, first of all, you're not going to do that to a child. I'm a child's advocate. You're not going to do that to a child in front of me and me not say anything, not mm-hmm. come to that child's rescue. And also to the mother, she had to be going through something in my mind to do that in public where others could see. It obviously was so normal to her that she could do that to her child and no one would say anything. But on this particular occasion, that wasn't the case. I had to step up and say something. If we don't do that, that child that got hit, the two that she had, and her, they need help. Mm-hmm. And when I stepped to the young lady and let her know, number one, do not hit that child again. I will call the police. That got her attention. And from there, I just began talking to her and realized that this was a woman who was overwhelmed. She was in a domestic violent relationship, poverty, just a whole lot of issues she had going on. And I was able to step in and give her some resources. And also, I took the children and I said, well, why don't I take the children and you finish your shopping. Because you could tell she was frazzled. Finish your shopping, and then I'll be here when you get back. And so that's what I did. I know most people won't go that far because they think, oh, well, that's somebody else's business. You know, don't step in, you know. But when I see those little children in their eyes, they were saying, help me, please, somebody help me. Can nobody see what's going on? Please help me. And if we don't do it, then who will?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, thank you so much for doing that. Like you said, clearly, you know, that mom, having two kids was overwhelming to me. When the third one came along, I spaced them out a little bit more then. But it's like, it is overwhelming. And sometimes if there's too much on our plate, you know, we need support, we need help. And if we don't have resources or access to that, life gets hard and challenging. And sometimes just getting from A to B with three kids can take all that we have. So thank you for doing that and modeling some kindness for this mom and her kids. That there is someone there that's willing to help. There is someone there that's willing to step in if we perhaps, you know, need help in the future. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. But I take it as something that all of us as human beings should do. It is helping yes. our fellow yes. person, that person next to you. It's about that. And I see that that's what you do in helping others. In your mind, what are the consequences of living with this unhealed trauma, the secrecy, the shame?
Well, like we just touched upon earlier, I mean, it is, and I often say, it wasn't the abuse itself that hurt the most. It was living with the secrecy and the shame and not being able to talk to anybody because I didn't really understand what was happening or what had been done to me. So what that does and did to me, like you mentioned earlier, it's like as a young adult, I started acting out. I started smoking very young, 12 years old. I was smoking cigarettes. I drank a lot of alcohol and acted out. In you know, various ways, self-harming ways. And when I got married, that's really when the biggest struggle started because it was hard to be in a loving relationship when I didn't believe I was worthy of love. and that I was going to let my husband into my heart. And I will often say it probably took me like 12 years to trust that he was here to stay. I mean, 24 years later, we're still together, but it was really the kind of the turning point where my husband said, it's like, I cannot feel your heart. And it devastated me because I'm like, what do you mean? You're asking me to do something. I don't even know what that feels like or looks like or what it's supposed to feel like to let somebody love you. So I think that's the most devastating impact of being traumatized, especially, but like just the statistics that you read, most of us are hurt by someone we know and trust and love. So love ends up hurting, right? And then we struggle with the idea of self-love. We struggle with the idea of loving others. We struggle with the idea of letting other people love us. So it creates this isolation that we, not only does our body serve us brilliantly, like we talked about, it just shuts you down. It disconnects you from the pain. Your body is hardwired to protect you from any pain, both your biology, you know, your body and your nervous system will do that. But then also as a result of living in that state for so long, you start to form beliefs or filters about yourself and the world that are all fed through this, you know, I'm bad. I'm, you know, a shameful person. I am ugly. I am stupid. I am, you know, because you don't have any other answers. No one has given you the answers to explain what happens to your body and what happens to a child that grows up in a household where you're not safe, where you're not protected, where you're not nurtured or nourished or supported to go, you know, through the developmental stages that all children need to go through to become healthy, grounded, heart-centered adults. So it's that secret and shame that also, you know, research shows today that shame is toxic to our nervous system. It actually, just like in the event of trauma, which is a feeling of overwhelm to the body, you know, that pumps cortisol, you know, stress hormones into the body that is meant to help you survive, get through that traumatic event. But when you live in that traumatic event ongoing, then your body continues to pump stress hormones into your body, you know, and that's this state of tension that I lived with and a lot of survivors live with for many, 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 many years. And that is literally toxic to us. And that's where we end up having health issues because eventually the body just can't handle any more toxicity or stress in the body. So your biology starts to break down. And just like you, that mother that you described in the grocery store, chances are she was just at her breaking point in terms of the amount of stress that had been piled on top of her. Perhaps here was one more scenario and she just in gut reaction responded to wanting it to stop in that moment. And so we end up living our lives from that defensive, protected gut, you know, feeling first response place, which often isn't fun or pretty when you're in a loving relationship with another human who often gets, you know, the defense projected onto them instead of someone who is actually in their heart and in their body and can have an adult grounded conversation about what's really happening because it's just all filtered through the secrecy and the shame. And I see that all over our world right now, you know, the escalating violence in our world is that we have a lot of people that aren't getting the support that they need to understand trauma, to understand what it does to our bodies, what it does to our feelings, what it does to our ability to connect and connect and relate to, and have compassion and empathy for one another. It's because we are disconnected from ourselves. And that's been the brilliant journey for me. And that's why I call, you know, the book, The Journey to the Heart, because the more I connected with my heart, the more I feel connected to God, to all people, no matter what they've been through. I see myself in all of us because we're all human beings and we all, you know, struggle with the human condition the same way.
I believe that you are so right. I hear you. I hear you. I feel you. And I'm also thinking about how trauma affects us, as you said, in our relationships, that it took you almost 12 years to realize that your husband was there to stay. Mm-hmm. He wasn't going to leave you.
Yes.
That's powerful.
Yeah. It was very powerful. And I can feel just in my tears right now, just thinking back about, you know, how hard I made him work to prove to me that he loved me and that he wasn't going anywhere. And he's like, honey, we have three kids. I'm not leaving. And it wasn't, and it kind of dawned on me, wait a minute, it wasn't about him. It was about me. I needed to figure out how I was going to let this man's love touch my heart. I had really locked down my heart because I'd been so hurt by the people closest to me that I did love so dearly that it felt like a huge, huge risk. But I did it by, you know, starting to become the parent and the protector that I had needed myself. I started loving myself and my wounded little girl who still lives and lived inside of me. And, you know, because I didn't have a voice as a child, I found a way to give her a voice now. And that was the key. And then also understanding my biology, why I got so defended and defensive around my husband that I wasn't going to let him, you know, really, I wasn't going to take in his love. I understood finally what my biology, this is just, there's nothing wrong with me. This is okay. Hey, you're just protecting yourself. You're protecting your heart. This is what all humans do. But I had to learn how to self-regulate, how to calm down my body, and to really practice. I had to practice the healing, the steps towards healing journey. And that's what's brought me here.
Wow. Wow. We want to hear more about that. We'll be right back after this break.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In your experience, what would you tell someone who may be struggling in silence? What would you say to someone if you saw them and you picked up on these signs and you're this courageous person that's willing to step in there? What would you say to them?
Well, first of all, I mean, it would depend a little bit on who the person is, but if I see someone just struggling, I so appreciated when you just said earlier, I hear you, I see you, I feel you. These are things that I use a lot because trauma disconnects us and isolate us, and we feel alone and disconnected and misunderstood a lot. So I reach out to people a lot with just validation. And I see that you may be struggling with something. Is there anything I can do to help you? I'm here. I hear you. I see you. I'm willing to listen. And you're not alone. And often I will share, and that's what I think you see in my book. I kind of maybe reflect a little bit on some parts of my own journey or how these truths that I'm sharing, you know, helped me. And I know I've helped so many people just by being willing to share my own personal challenges, because we think that when we're left alone with these feels like crazy thoughts, the shame inside of us, that we are the only one and that we can't be truly seen and heard by other people because we feel so bad and so awful about ourselves, that I share just a little bit of, you know, I understand what you've been through. I may not exactly be in your shoes, but I can share with you, I have been through a similar situation. It was very hard. But the hardest part was when I thought I had no one to talk to. And for so many of us, we may not have anybody to talk to, but I was relentless in a way. And that's where I felt like God was nudging me along, that I was here for something and I was going to do whatever it took to figure out how I could learn about love and to be closer to God in a way, because to me, my God is love. And that, and I really want that for other people. So I approach people that are struggling with a lot of compassion. And I may not, I'm not here to tell you what to do or how to do it, but I'm more than happy to sit and listen and encourage you and support you in any way that you needed to move forward, because there is hope.
There is definitely that hope. And it just takes one person to see that this individual who may be being defensive or acting out or whatever, that something is going on in their life. And just one person stepping up and saying, I want to help you. How can I help? If I can do nothing but just sit here and listen to you. If I could just, you know, take care of your children for the night so that you can, for a couple of hours so that you can have a moment to yourself. Whatever I can do, I'm willing to be there. And I think that's so important.
Yes, yes. And I mean, because that was kind of the turning point for myself, for my own healing. You know, it wasn't until I was in a young adult that I realized that I needed help, because I had repressed the feelings and disconnected from for so long. And I had minimized it. I told myself, what's in the past? I don't need to deal with it. But my body, I was really starting to struggle and I didn't really understand why. And then it was talking to a friend that started to notice. He just started noticing, I see you're struggling with something. Do you want to talk about it? And I was floored, because my whole life I'd been pretending I was okay. I played Little Miss Perfect, right? Mm-hmm. And I was still doing that. And no one asked me. And so I think asking the people around us when we see they're struggling, just to let them know we can tell, you know, that we're actually that, you know, invested or curious about their well-being, that we're going to, hey, I see there's something going on. Do you need support? You know, can we help you? Would you like to talk about it? There are resources. Because when we're in the middle of it, we can't even see past, you know, our toes sometimes, because we are just, you know, doing our best to hold it together.
And with that comes a lot of stress, mm-hmm. a lot of stress, not only on your body, but your mind as well. And that's a stressful place to be, trying to be perfect and trying and minimizing your experience. That experience that brought you to where you are now. It's like, you know, putting in a little box and tying up a bow mm-hmm. on it to make it look pretty and just put it on the shelf. That's just not how our bodies and our minds work. All of that we went through is still trapped within our bodies and our mind until we find some way to release, or as you put it in your book, to recover, to begin that walk on a healing journey.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, there's a few points that I bring out. It's like, what do survivors need to heal? We need a safe place to tell our story. And that kind of unfolds throughout the journey, what part of our story and how we tell it. And we need to be believed when we tell our story. We need that validation. I mean, like I said, my wounded inner child was so hurt that no one believed her, or she was afraid that no one was going to believe her. But I've done a lot of that work of just like, I hear you, baby girl. I know you're in there, and I know, and I believe you. I was there. It's the truth. I know you hurt. I know it was hard. And then we survivors need to be told that they can heal. Many of us fear starting the healing journey because we even don't think we can. It's like we feel, am I just going to be stigmatized with a mental health issue or as a crazy person, or that, you know, my whole life is going to fall apart about as a result? That's not it at all. It's like you can heal, you can restore. And that's where the education about the steps. How do you heal? How do you heal your body, your nervous system, your thoughts, your feelings, your beliefs? And then we need support. None of us is going to do this alone. And I wouldn't be here if it hadn't been for, you know, the support groups that I found along the way, the support from my family, and to be encouraged with a lot of hope. And I think that's kind of that I see as my primary role with the people I work with. I've walked this path, and I wouldn't be here without the encouragement and hope I got from others. And I'm paying it forward. It's like, I believe in you. You are a human being. You have all the things that you need to heal and restore. We already came with all the equipment or the skills and the tools. We just need to be reminded that this is all inside of you. It's just to be kind of reprogrammed, so to speak, that you can use who you are as a human for, you know, love and for living wholeheartedly in connection and harmony with yourself, with others, and of course, with God.
Yes, as I said earlier, this is such a powerful conversation. Hearing you talk to your little girl, we do that in counseling, and I call it psychodrama. And getting mm-hmm. the client to be one with themselves. I often say, you know, it's that little girl, it's that little boy in you who needs some attention. You know, she hasn't grown up. Her growth is stunted way back there when she could remember, you know, being 6 or 8 years old, as you said earlier. To that point, you are that 8-year-old kid. She never got a chance to really grow up emotionally, because she was so mm-hmm. trapped and so defeated. And so offering that psychodrama and giving the person an opportunity to speak out and speak to that little person inside of them is often a great turning point in therapy.
Yes, yes, exactly. It's incredibly, you know, powerful. And it surprises people because it's so simple. And I mean, just as I'm sitting here in my office, I'm looking at a picture of myself as a 6-year-old self. I keep her close always. She's never going to go a day without me knowing, I see you, baby girl. I know you're here. You're with me always. You're my most important relationship. And that I can just feel the warmth just kind of start from my heart as I said it. It's like, now she knows I'm not going to let anybody hurt her. I'm not going to let anybody hurt her again. I'm her parent and her protector today. And that creates tremendous peace for this little girl who never felt safe ever in her childhood.
As you said, she didn't even feel safe enough to go to sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
That's torment. Mm-hmm. That's terror. And I can only imagine what any child would do to go to any lengths to protect itself. And so in talking to our little person, because that little person, like you said, you keep her near, you keep a picture of her, you talk to her out loud. And some people might say, oh, you know, Sava and Dr. Bev are a little cray cray right there. Well, until you try it, you know, they really don't know. And often I find that in giving them the opportunity to call that child up, you know, how are you doing today? What's going on with you? What can I do for you today? It's amazing what comes out of that person's mouth, the catharsis when they just cry tears of that little child wanted to cry, but could not do that as a child, because that would only bring her more drama, trauma, and chaos.
Yes, exactly. It is. And I actually have done some webinars on this where I model, I bring out my little teddy bear. That's my little girl, because I think it's important that we have something cuddly to hug and snuggle outside of us. And I know people cringe the first few times they see me do it. But then I also get emails from people where, because I'm talking to her in the kind tone of voice that you just heard me use. And it really shows people. It's like they don't even know what it feels like to be spoken to and nurtured in this kind, loving way. And so, because I didn't know what it felt to be loved, to love Svava. What does that even feel like? And so I know by sharing some of that, I have modeled for other adults how to start loving this part of ourselves. And again, because we cringe, we feel it feels uncomfortable because inside there is a wounded part that is trying to get your attention. And we end up rejecting ourselves when we don't find a way to validate our truth. And we hand this little person, the part of us who really is so desperate for love that we'll do whatever for other people, we end up handing that part to other people. Like I used to hand my little girl to my husband. You love her. She's a handful. I don't know what to do with her. She's so upset all the time. She just rages and she hates people and she distrusts everyone and she expects the worst from the world. I'm like, oh. And then I was like, wait a minute. She feels rejected every time I expect other people to love her. I have to love her. I have to, you know, validate and hold and soothe her and let her express her hurts, express her sadness, express her worry. And it's like, yeah, baby girl, I know you have every right. Of course you felt that. Of course. I know. I remember I was there. You're so true.
And that, again, is just very powerful to believe in oneself, to talk to self and that little child within us, protect that child and let that child know that from this point forward, you are going to be loved. I am going to be here for you. People wonder when we, you know, we hear this euphemism about, you know, loving oneself. And I often have people ask me, okay, well, I hear that, but how do I do that? You're showing and saying an example of how you do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And self-love is not a luxury. It's a necessity. It's a necessity because, you know, we often think that by loving ourselves, we're being selfish, but it's not true. And that's, you know, I definitely started my healing journey for my kids, wanting to be a better mom and not to make sure that what happened to me wouldn't happen to them. But then at some point I realized, wait a minute, I'm their teacher. I'm the one they're looking to learn from about how to be a loving and kind adult. And I can't just do it for them. It has to be authentic, something that I do for me, that I, you know, love who I am, that I respect who Svava is. And the self-care is a crucial piece. And also self-care is a primary focus in my life now, knowing the toxic stress that I lived with for so many years. I'm doing whatever I can to reverse that damage. And I do that with exquisite self-love and self-care because I'm worthy of it.
Yes, you are so worthy, as are all of us. We are worthy. And to know our worth is to have power. To know our worth is to have control over one's self. To know our worth gives us the ability to love another and be fully present in that moment with another. To be that mother or that father that we want to be. Our self-worth means everything.
Yes, exactly. And self-worth is a daily action. It's a daily practice. Just like, you know, it's not just a decision that you make in your head or you write down, yeah, I'm worthy. But what does that look like? What does that feel like? How do you model that? Do people that know you know that you treat yourself with kindness and respect because you value yourself? And I think that, again, going back to what we see our world struggling with today, we are so confused about power.
Svava, I am so thankful to have you on the show today. Tell me, where can our listeners find more information about you and the resources that you offer?
Well, my website is educateforchange.com, and that's educate4change.com. And I don't know, perhaps you can have that.
I'll have that on the show page for you. You're right.
Exactly, yes. And I was actually thinking, I do have another link that I would love to send to you that gives people access to an excerpt from the book that I give 2 weeks worth of material from the 365-day guide, The Journey to the Heart book. So that kind of just give people a taste of or an insight to the daily empowerment or inspiration that I invite people to consider every day as they're moving on with their life from maybe struggling with being just a victim or a survivor and choosing to become a thriver, to live wholeheartedly again. And then I'm on, social media, most places. If people want to look me up, I also do Periscopes, live chats 5 times a week, where I kind of take people through my books and I talk about a little bit about the healing and then invite people to comment and question. And I write blogs every week, a lot about what I teach to my clients I write about. And I find that it helps people to read my blogs for a while. And then they reached out to me when they're really wanting to dig deep or finding the support that they need to make that shift in their lives. And I think those are my biggest resources. And then, of course, my books that are available on Amazon or Kindle.
And we're going to have all of that on our show page for our listening audience and for anyone who wants to reach out to you as a source. You are powerful, you are loved, and you are worthy. Thank you so much. This is Emotions Are Us.